You better believe there is a slippery slope with morality. You're about to hear some eye-opening information.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want you to think with me back to the book of Deuteronomy when Moses spoke to the people of Israel in the 30th chapter. He presented them with two options. Do you remember? Life or death. And in case they weren't clear, he said, choose life. He didn't say choose dead religion. He didn't say choose man's traditions. He didn't just say choose a bunch of good laws. He said, choose life because God's ways are life. I want to show you today, friends, that when we depart from God's ways of life, there is an inevitable destructive slippery slope. The good news is even the world can recognize that something is wrong. Michael Brown, welcome to the broadcast today. It is Wednesday. On Wednesdays, we focus in particular on moral and cultural issues, always from a biblically based kingdom perspective. This is not a political talk show. This is not a conservative political talk show. If it were, the only subject I'd be talking about right now would be the potential scandals with the government and the cover-up with Benghazi and the IRS and how far does this go and is the president involved and so on. That is not my focus. I may reference something that is relevant, but my focus here is not politics. My focus is the kingdom of God, and as citizens of heaven, how do we live in this world? To join in the discussion, the number to call is 866-348-7884. If you have not yet visited my completely revamped website, askdrbrown.org. Please do it. Check out the latest video. Check out the latest article. Check out the latest blog post. You'll be blessed. You'll be encouraged. You'll be stirred. Later today, we should be putting online for the latest video a debate I did just this Saturday night, another Calvinism debate with a Long Island pastor and colleague of mine, longtime friend, former student. We'll be putting that up, so if you just check later today, latest video. But every day, go there because there's new stuff being posted every single day. 866-348-7884. I remember in college, there was a speech class that I was in, and one of the exercises that we had was that we were going to have a debate. I may have referenced this once or twice on the air over the years. If this gentleman is listening, the fellow who headed up the debate team for the other side was an Armenian, not Arminian versus Calvinist, but Armenian from Armenia. And if I'm almost sure I remember his name, Yiprem Sinanian. Now, Yiprem, if you're out there listening, give me a call, 866-348-7884. And we each had a panel, and we debated euthanasia. I was against it. He was for it. And as we debated, let's say my position was I felt I was eight through 10 in terms of sure and definite against it because of the cases you could argue where it seems merciful. You know, someone 98 years old can't recover in agony, just suffering. They're going to die in a few months anyway, end their pain. I knew the compassion argument you could give it. And he was like two or three in terms of the opposite side. At the end, he was one, I was 10. In other words, we were only strength in our convictions, but it's a terribly serious matter. And I bring it up at the outset to say, we've watched what happens. We've watched what happens when a nation or people does not choose life and the slippery slope is inevitable. Hopefully, as it happens in a culture, the people begin to wake up. Back with some shocking information about euthanasia in Holland. We come back and your calls.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast, 866-348-7884. Before we get back to our topic of slippery slope, when we depart from God's ways, from the ways of life, there is an inevitable slippery slope, and it brings ultimately destruction. I always and only feel bad for people who reject God's ways and head in the wrong destructive direction. Sometimes I'm grieved by their actions, but I know ultimately where it's going to lead. And as atheists will celebrate some breakthrough, I feel terrible for them because there is no breakthrough against God. 866-348-7884. But before I give you some specific examples of this, just on a purely personal note, when I travel out, as I did last week, met with so many of you wonderful listeners, sometimes if I'm having a specific meeting with a lot of radio listeners, I'll ask them which day of the week they like best or what happens on different days. And the day that everybody knows by name is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And they all tell me that they learn so much from Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And they find it so interesting and fascinating. And we've got a real eye-opening show tomorrow, in fact, on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday about the Church of Scotland, past and present, and its relationship to Israel and the Jewish people. But then others will say the day they enjoy most is Friday. You've got questions, we've got answers, because they're just so intrigued by the different questions that come in, or they get to ask their questions, or they find it so fascinating. But what I get the deepest appreciation for, people thanking me for standing, people thanking me for speaking, people telling me that my voice is making a difference, I get the deepest appreciation for dealing with moral and cultural issues from a biblical perspective. Now look, there is a deep part of who I am that is called to go against the grain. In that sense, called to be prophetic, to speak to the culture, to speak a wake-up call to the church as one of many servants of the Lord doing this. It's in my blood to confront unrighteousness. I've been in public settings, you know, in an airport, and there's some guy, you know, wearing a shirt with the F word on it, just at an airport. He's waiting to get on the plane. And I've gone up to him. You know, it's happened a few times. I've gone up to the person and said, hey, is that appropriate to wear that? You know, you got kids here and things like that. I don't know if it's legal or not, but talk to him on that level. I've confronted people over it and then shared the gospel with them. I was flying out on U.S. Air to Texas, probably last year this was. There was a big guy with one of these shirts, blatant F word on it. And I just went up to the gate agents and said, hey, is that allowed? And they're like, oh, no, you're not supposed to. And they went to the guy, and next thing he was escorted away, came back a little later, he had bought something new and put it on top. Now, I'm not trying to be a moral policeman. I'm simply saying it's in my blood when I see something wrong to confront it and then to offer that person the good news and grace through the gospel whenever possible. But my grounding is in Scripture. My grounding is in the Word of God. Everything in my thinking flows out of that. As I sit here speaking to you, I'm looking at two bookshelves directly across from me in my studio. The left bookshelf is all Hebrew dictionaries, ancient Hebrew dictionaries, biblical Hebrew dictionaries, some of the whole history of the Hebrew language, then Hebrew grammars and other texts like that. The right shelf is the exact same thing in Greek, and then biblical encyclopedias and dictionaries. That's the world I've lived in for decades. Everything I'm doing flows out of Scripture, flows out of my burden to be salt and light, flows out of my burden to live in a holistic way as a disciple. And therefore, I come back to the ways of life and death, the two paths. This is an article from ABC News about euthanasia. Begins by saying this: bearing a hypodermic syringe filled with a lethal dose of potassium chloride, a Dutch doctor walks into a pediatric ward and quickly administers an injection to relieve a young family of the burden of raising a severely handicapped newborn child. Yes. And by the way, doctors have admitted to doing this without even telling the parent. The child died. In another case, a male child born with deformed genitalia is put to death because the doctors and his parents concur that he will have a poor quality of life. You see, this is the direction it goes, friends. In the Netherlands, there are at least 10 such cases a year of active euthanasia of newborn infants and at least 100 cases of passive euthanasia in which life support treatment is switched off, according to official figures provided by the Dutch Pediatric Association. Not the place to be born. Not the place to be born if you've got some serious problem or issue. Following the adoption of a new euthanasia code of practice by the Dutch Parliament last week, Matt, when was this story? It says this, physicians will have even more liberty than they already had to dispatch their patients. Newborn euthanasia is now gaining acceptability in the Netherlands, and like euthanasia for older patients, the practice is expected to become more common as the legal barriers against it are torn down. Quote, only a physician can commit homicide with impunity, Pliny the Elder said. Some 2,000 years later in the Netherlands, quote, mercy killings are routine. Professor Zier Versluis of the University of Utrecht is an advocate of newborn euthanasia in circumstances in which the child's quality of life will be severely impeded, in the opinion of the doctor. He describes a case history. Quote, a baby was born with severe spina bifida and three other congenital diseases. We decided not to operate because we hoped the child would die, but it did not. The child could drink and be handled, and it's caught after much discussion between the parents, the doctors, and a priest. It was decided that the best thing was that the child should die. This was done with sedatives. It's hard for me to even read this. And by the way, this was 1993. Okay, this is 20 years ago. The shocking information since then is absolutely mind-boggling. CNN, March 9th, 2012. Dutch euthanasia clinic offers mobile service. A doctor's main duty is indeed to preserve life. On the other hand, they say they have a duty to relieve the patient's suffering. They make a choice. You're suffering. We kill you. Or you're not going to have good quality of life. We kill you or we let you die. We try to just let you die, but if that doesn't work, we kill you. And doctors have admitted in recent reports that they've done this by the thousands without families ever being informed whatsoever. You say, why do you bring this up, Mike? Because it is the evidence. It is the direction of a slippery slope. When we play God, when we think it's up to us. And look, I know there are agonizing situations. And you just want the suffering to end. But ultimately, when we interfere with things, we ought not. Same with redefining marriage, by the way. Same with getting away from sexual morality. You end up in an inevitable slippery slope that brings death and destruction. That's why without shame, we need to proclaim that God's ways are ways of life. Let's go to the phones. Glenn in the Bronx, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, good afternoon. And how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Yeah, in regards to your topic, yesterday I think you spoke on the something to do with prayer, and today the topic is sort of similar because from yesterday I think I was watching the CBN program yesterday with Patrick Butson, and they were speaking of child trafficking and some of the children that are used as sexual slaves. Some of them have been sold into it by their very own parents, like their moms and dads, for material stuff. And, you know, it's like so many things that we have to pray about. I don't know if I am correct. To me, right now, I think the church should just be praying for the return of God, because it's like All over. Whenever I look all over, it's like just calamity. For instance, even right here in the U.S., where you have this distinction with the gun, your gun stuff, and I see folks just buying guns, and they claim it's for protection. And I'm like, who said that you could ever protect yourself? Well, in what they're claiming, because, I mean, you don't hold tomorrow. None of us hold tomorrow. None of us know what's going to become of us tomorrow. And, I mean, people...
Yes, so Glenn, I've got a break here. Got a break. You make a point that we need to discuss. Things are so messed up in so many ways. It's like the dam is bursting at 100 different places. We only have 10 fingers to put in the holes, stop the flood. Should we just be praying for Jesus to return, or should we be praying for that and something else? I'll answer it when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast, 866-348-7884. We're talking about the inevitable slippery slope, the fact that when you deviate from the path of life, that you will end up in a place you didn't plan to be. You know, the old saying about sin, it'll always cost you more than you expect it to pay. It'll keep you longer than you expect it to stay. And it'll take you places you never expect it to go. 866-348-7884. In fact, I just want to play a clip for you. This is on CBN. It's May 2013, so it is quite current. And these are students speaking up against the hookup culture, just the promiscuity, everybody just sleeps around. You know, I read a statistic that was quite illuminating. After the counterculture revolution of the 60s, which included the sexual revolution, which gave birth to radical feminism and gay liberation and these other movements, as a result of that, there were statistics that indicated that in America, the use of prostitutes went down. Now, this is a stat I read from other reports, not one that I researched in terms of the journals, wherever it was reported. And the reason was because women were more readily available. Women were happier to just sleep around, 1960 birth control pill just quietly appears, and now you can pretty easily separate sex from procreation and just make it a matter of recreation. And I'm not saying in certain cases that birth control is wrong. I'm simply saying in the culture it had this overall effect. And you end up with just anybody sleeps around with anybody. Not that everyone is doing it, but it's so pervasive that even worldly people, even people who don't believe in God or believe in our scriptures, have issues with it. Let's play clip number one.
Frieda surveyed more than 2,000 college students across the country. 41% use words like regretful, miserable, disgusted, ashamed, duped, and abused to describe their hookup experience. 23% expressed ambivalence. The author's conclusion, many felt alone and unsure of how to change the culture.
All right, this was a student speak out against the hookup culture by Ephraim Graham, news anchor and reporter. I want to go right into the next quote where students speak at a little bit more length about this. They have something called the Anscombe Society. It's named after Elizabeth Anscombe, the 20th century philosopher who preached traditional sexual ethics. Clip number two.
Christians say, Audrey Polnow and Ben Koons are challenging the hookup culture. They're part of the Anscombe Society, a group named after Elizabeth Anscombe, the 20th century philosopher who preach traditional sexual ethics.
In its mission statement, Princeton's Anscombe Society describes itself as dedicated to affirming the importance of the family, marriage, and a proper understanding of the role of sex and sexuality. It is a mission that is not partisan or religious.
That's a very important part of the group, is that we think you can hold to these positions, these, you know, what might seem like very difficult positions nowadays, without ascribing to any particular faith, without having any special revelation from God. We think that these are just rules written on the hearts of men.
Cassie Huff founded Princeton's Anscombe Society when she was a student in 2005.
It was with the goal of providing that intellectual voice, providing that cultural voice, letting students know that there are reasons behind these commitments, but also that there's a community of support if they were tired of the hookup culture.
Right. A lot of people, even without getting born again or having a revelation of God and His purity, recognize something's wrong with this. Everybody sleeping around with everybody. Sex so cheapened. And if people want to, quote, preserve their virginity, they'll find other ways of doing things sexually and avoiding one particular aspect of it and say, oh, well, we're still preserving our virginity. Even in the church, and plenty of people, here my friend Rabbi Shmuley has, we agree on a lot of things. And he has looked at the youthful sex culture. And as a marital counselor, he has counseled many couples in their 20s who are not interested in sex. They're married. They're burnt out. They were so promiscuous before they were married. Sex was such a trivialized, cheap thing that they got burnt out on it. God says choose life. God says choose life. When we choose life, life multiplied brings more life. Truth multiplied brings more truth. God's goodness multiplied brings more goodness. But if you multiply lust, where does it get you? If you multiply hatred and anger, where does it get you? If you multiply destroying of foundations, where does it get you? The strong foundations multiplied get stronger. But here, you redefine marriage, and people are crying out for every kind of other arrangement. New Zealand just recently redefined marriage, and immediately people are crying out for other forms of relationships to be recognized. But of course, and we've documented it here in America, TV shows that were pioneers in celebrating, quote, gay rights, by which I mean gay activist causes, not the humane treatment of every human being, but gay activist causes, they're now celebrating polygamy, shows like Big Love and Sister Wives, they're celebrating polyamory. Showtime did a reality TV show on polyamory. Cases are going to the court saying, why can't we have the same rights if two men can marry or two women can marry? Then how about multiple couples? Why should we be discriminated against? It's inevitable. So what about the question that I was asked before the last break? Yes, we should be fervently praying for Jesus to return. Yes, we are in a critical state in the world where we just need God's intervention. At the same time, we should be praying for awakening and transformation, because there are billions of people that need to hear the gospel and hundreds of millions more that need to be confronted with moral truth. Let me equip you for action. Let me stir your heart and give you a path for action. My book, Revolution, which has literally rocked the lives of tens of thousands of readers over the years, along with a simple 5x7 card, just a simple card to put in the book or in your Bible, 10 commitments of a Jesus revolutionary. What to do on a daily basis, a simple way of how to live this out. Your gift of any size will send this out to you. Be as generous as you can, but everybody, those who have little, those who have a lot, do what you can, and it's our joy to send this out to you. It'll help sharpen your faith, deepen your commitment, and give you practical steps to take. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. The Revolution book and the 5x7 card. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. 7-8. Together, friends, with the Lord, we are making a difference.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire, friends. What happens when we deviate from the path? Jesus said that we should enter through the narrow gate. He said that straight is the road, narrow is the gate that leads to life, and only a few find it. But wide is the gate, broad is the way that leads to destruction, and many go that way. In other words, it's the difference between life and destruction, not between being religious and being secular. Not between going to church and not going to church. It's the difference between life and death. Jesus brings life. 866-348-7884. We're talking about the slippery slope, the inevitable slippery slope. When you deviate from truth, when you deviate from God's ways, inevitably, other things will happen. You'll end up doing things you never planned to do. Here, I spoke to a couple of hundred young people in Chicago years ago, late 90s maybe, and a lot of them were non-believers. They were at a Christian club meeting, and a lot of them were non-believers. And I asked them, I said, let's be honest, how many of you are doing things today that you would have guaranteed me 2 years ago you'd never do? And a lot of the hands went up. I said, then you can't guarantee me today that 2 years from now you won't be doing all kinds of other things. See, why does this happen? Because the heart gets hard. It happens because we, little by little by little, lose our sensitivity, lose our sense of conscience, lose our moral bearings. That's what happens. And then, because we depart from the straight way, we fall into ditches we never planned to fall into. I used in the first half hour an example about euthanasia. You could make a very compassionate case for euthanasia in certain situations. You could make a very compassionate case for relieving suffering of someone. Let's say the person has advanced Alzheimer's. They have not been coherent in years. Cancer is spread through their body and they're in agony. They are not on any type of special life support, extraordinary means, but they're just, they can eat, or perhaps they've, you know, just being fed through a feeding tube, but they are being sustained. You could make a very compassionate case. Look, we could just end this person's suffering. Their mind is gone. Their body is gone. They're never going to recover. You could make a case for it, but then we end up playing God. And where you end up going is a place you never planned to go. According to LifeSiteNews.com, almost half of Belgium's euthanasia nurses have admitted to killing without consent, despite the fact that involuntary euthanasia is illegal in Belgium. In Belgium, nearly half of all cases of euthanasia are not reported to the Federal Control and Evaluation Committee. A recent study found that in the Flemish part of Belgium, 66 of 208 cases of euthanasia occurred in the absence of request or consent. There's a 5,000% increase in Belgian euthanasia in 11 years since legislation. Summary of recent developments in Netherlands documenting a 15 to 20% increase in euthanasia cases per year since 2006. Legal requirements in Belgium were more frequently not met in unreported cases than in reported cases, and a written request for euthanasia was absent in 88% of cases. So you just have babies and adults being killed by doctors and nurses because they think it's the compassionate thing to do. And we have the horrors of what's happened with Dr. Gosnell, at least rightly exposed for his crimes. Hey, if abortion is okay, Why not kill a baby that you didn't successfully abort? It's okay to kill it in the womb. Why not outside the womb? 866-348-7884.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, we're always told, oh, no, never go in that direction. We just want this. If we have this, we'll be satisfied. It doesn't work like that. Even if that particular group is satisfied with the change, with the slippery slope adjustment, there's going to be another group that's not. Once you open the door, there is no limit to it. 866-348-7884. When we talk about the issue of marriage, redefining marriage, you can watch the debate. Go to my website, askdrbrown.org. Just click on latest videos. Scroll down. You'll see my debate with Professor Eric Small on same-sex so-called marriage. Simple question he couldn't answer. Why is marriage limited to two people? He couldn't answer it. He wouldn't answer it. Just please explain before we get into a debate about whether it should be redefined, on what basis is it about two people? Why two? Why was it wrong for the woman who married herself? Yes, this actually happened. Last year, a woman had a ceremony and married herself. She had it with busted relationships and things and married herself. The only sane words spoken that day were by her 11-year-old son, who said, Mom, I love you, but you're embarrassing me. Well, why is that wrong? What's the problem with it? Well, marriage is always about two people. No, it's not about two people. It's about a man and a woman. Here, I'm looking at the wall there. There's a wall plug. All right, you've got the plug, the male plug, the receptacle plug, the female. It's not just about two items. You have to have two items to make a connection. You need a male and female, because marriage was not just about two people like each other or love each other and want to spend the rest of their lives together. Otherwise, the government wouldn't get involved with it. It's about much more. It's always been about a man and a woman. Once you redefine it to say any two people, then you have no legitimate way to say it can't be any three people, or four, or eight, or 10, or 12, or one. Mike, you're crazy. No, this is already happening. Here, let me just give you an example. Sexual revolution. We have freedom from the shackles of traditional Christianity, freedom from the shackles of traditional religion, freedom from the shackles of the old fashion ways of the old generation. I'm sure there's some old-fashioned ways, and I'm sure there's some human tradition brought in that brought bondage, not life. But here's what happens. The experiment becomes destructive. New York Times, this is for those that do not know, New York Times is not a conservative Bible publication. New York Times, April 2012, reports in 1960... about 450,000 unmarried couples lived together. All right, about 450,000. Now the number is more than 7.5 million. Now the U.S. population from 1960 until today has not multiplied, 18 times to get to that number? But the number of people cohabiting has. The majority of young adults in their 20s will live with a romantic partner at least once, and more than half of all marriages will be preceded by cohabitation. The shift has been attributed to the sexual revolution and the availability of birth control. And in our current economy, sharing the bills makes cohabiting appealing. But when you talk to people in their 20s, you also hear about something else, cohabitation as prophylaxis, that they find this is an easier way to avoid unwanted pregnancy. The fact is, people who live together, this has been documented for some years now in Scandinavian countries, people who live together before marriage have a higher percentage of divorce once they do get married. The whole idea, well, we'll check it out and see how compatible we are, doesn't work like that. Here, fatherlessness, okay? And here are stats, just to show you how far we've jumped. I'll give you stats from 1960 to 1995 first. Children living with the mother only, 1960, 8%. 1995, 23%. White America, 1960, 6.1% of children living with mother only, 1995, 18.3%. Black America, 1960, 19.1% living with mother only, 1995, 58.3%. I have such a sense of solidarity with my black brothers and sisters and see the attack through abortion and fatherlessness and so many other things. An attack on black Americans, a real satanic desire to wipe out people called to be ministers of life and ministers of deliverance, just like there's the attack on the newborn baby boys in the days of Moses and the days of Jesus. I see this genocidal attack against black America, and my heart beats with my black brothers and sisters to see this reversed. It's going to take holistic living in the church and the grace of God to bring about change in society, working together to bring about change. Today, stats are even more staggering, more frightening. Why? Because it's the inevitable direction. Once you tamper with the foundations, it's the inevitable direction. Here, I'm going to go to the phones in one moment. If, in fact, marriage is simply the right to be with the one you love, we have the right to marry the one we love, then what moral argument can you give against multiple partners if they love each other? You say, well, they weren't born that way. They weren't wired that way. You see, a homosexual man is wired that way. A lesbian woman is wired that way. She's been that way from birth. She can never change. Well, I know plenty of people have changed. In fact, I keep hearing from more and more of them. And others who said, well, my desires haven't changed, but I'm content to be single at this stage in my life and love the Lord until change does come. And I've got a great circle of friends and family. But in point of fact, there are some people who said they're hardwired bisexual. So do they then get the right to marry a man and a woman? And there are some who say they're hardwired to love people and things they shouldn't. Well, obviously, we take moral exception to that. And then there are others who say, I'm hardwired to be polyamorous. Plenty of men say, I'm hardwired not to have just one partner. I'm hardwired to have multiple partners. So aside from putting aside the hardwiring myth, if you just have the right to marry the one you love, then what about what happened in New York City with Professor David Epstein? Columbia University had a multi-year consensual affair with his adult daughter. Is arrested for it, charged for it. Students on the Columbia University website were saying, well, if they love each other, and they're not hurting anybody, what's wrong with it? You see, you deviate from the foundations. You don't just slide down. You go falling off a cliff. That's why we need to uphold the ways of life without shame. Without shame, friends. Without fear. Without thinking that we're just being some old religious fogies. Young people need life. Young people need family. Young people need the holistic, whole, healthy ways of God. Holiness is the way to ultimate spiritual, mental, physical health. 866-348-7884. John in Rockaway, New Jersey. Thanks so much for calling the Line of Fire.
How you doing, Dr. Michael Brown? Nice speaking with you once again.
Thank you.
Two comments, if I may.
Yes.
The first one, I want to speak in regard to you saying about these people being hardwired a specific way. And I agree with them. They are hardwired that way. Because the scripture's clear that we're all wicked and depraved. And for those particular people, it manifests, their sin nature manifests in that way. So I think it's accurate to say that they do have those feelings, they're real, but it's because of their sin nature, and it manifests in that particular way for that particular person.
And by the way, the soundbite on that, when someone says, I was born that way, if you don't want to get into a scientific argument, say, yeah, that's why Jesus said you must be born again. We're all born in sin, we're all born messed up. So that's the soundbite response to that for Christians. But back to you for your second point.
My second point is this. With the incident down in Philadelphia with this so-called doctor who was convicted of murdering innocent children, my question is to you, why isn't the church out there on the streets like they should be? Some people are proclaiming the truth of the gospel. But we should be up in arms as the body of Christ speaking of this atrocity. I mean, I think a lot of Christians are caught up in themselves and the pleasures of the world instead of taking a stand for, you know, against this horrific act in our culture. Why isn't there more Christians out there the way they should be protesting such
Because we are asleep in the light, John. Because we have become complacent. Because we have been preaching and listening to a self-serving gospel, what's in it for me? Because we would rather not be bothered by the horror of abortion. We'd rather not be bothered by destruction of society. Because I want to believe God for bigger and better life for me. However, the Kermit Goslow case is such that people are rallying second hour today. So listen online later on AskDrBrown.org. Second hour today, I'm going to be speaking with a guest in Charlotte about some major changes that are happening if we'll seize the moment. We got to wake up, though, John. You're right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is interesting news from Brazil. Thanks for joining us, Michael Brown, talking about the inevitable slippery slope. But the good news is God's ways are ways of life. And at a certain point, people recognize, oh, we're heading in the wrong direction. One reason I wrote A Queer Thing Happened to America was to awaken the conscience of the nation. Americans want to be fair. Americans love equality. Americans don't want to be guilty of segregation and discrimination again. The gay rights movement has been presented as the new civil rights movement. Gay is the new black. Americans want to be kind-hearted and open, etc. But when you see where gay activism is going, you realize, oh, that's not what we signed up for. Brazil, BBC, three-person civil union sparks controversy. This is August 2012. Ms. Dominguez, who's based in the Sao Paulo city of Tupã, said the move reflected the fact that the idea of a family had changed. Quote, we're only recognizing what's always existed. We're not inventing anything. For better or worse, it doesn't matter, but what we considered a family before isn't necessarily what we would consider a family today. So why can't you have a three-person civil union? Why not? Tell me. By the way, ACLU is pushing for Modern Family to have a gay wedding. But of course. Say, Mike, do you watch Modern Family? Actually, I've never seen it, but I understand it's a popular TV show. Hey, the advocacy arm of the nonprofit ACLU has launched an online campaign urging the show's producers to marry Cameron Tucker and Mitchell Pritchett, the gay couple that comprises one-third of the hit ABC sitcoms Pritchett Clan. Until now, the two have been living in unwanted sort of bliss along with a daughter. Gay marriage is not legal in California where the characters live. Yeah. Okay. Last week, I had a guest on whom I said to politely on the air, I don't think I've ever had a guest on in my life that I differed with more profoundly than him. Mikey Weinstein. Although he said he prays three times a day, he described himself as a jagnostic, Jewish agnostic. And he has been working with the Pentagon, shock of shocks, for those of you who served in the military and those of you who are people of faith in the military today. He's been working with the Pentagon, claiming that over 25% of the military is fundamentalist, dominionist, basically wanting to take over the military and turn it into a Jesus army for our destructive purposes. He claims about 38 million Americans hold to this ideology. That's right. I just want to play two snippets of my interview. He told me that I was the most civil, this is the most civil treatment he's gotten from a host like me. But listen to what he had to say.
Calling me anti-Christian gets me angry. Very, very angry. And that's like saying that I'm anti-driver. I'm against anybody that drives a car, which is actually true, Michael, if they're driving DUI or in violation of the driving laws. We fight only a small portion of Christianity, which is not evangelical or mainline or, you know, Christianity at all. Our largest growth area are evangelical Christians. They're on our board. They donate to us. They're our supporters, and they're clients of ours. We fight what is known as fundamentalist or dominionist Christians that have become an alloy in the U.S. military.
From one report, I see that you said roughly 12.6% of the American public, or 38 million people. Is that accurate, or is that a misquote of you?
No, that's very accurate. That's our best sense of it. We think it's somewhere in about 28% of the military are dominionist or fundamentalist Christians.
All right. What they call dominionist, fundamentalist, that's you and me. In other words, that we want to see the gospel of Jesus go through the entire world, that we want to see lives changed through the gospel. That now, people might say, oh, no, that's not who we're talking about. Trust me, we all get put in this camp. 38 million Americans, 28% of the military. The opposite, friends, there is active discussion now. I mean, legislation being drawn up where if you share your faith with someone in the military and they are offended by that, that you could be court-martialed. And Mikey Weinstein, we need to pray for him. We really need to pray that God would touch him and convict him and reveal his love, reveal Jesus to him, and give him grace to repent and believe. But when you hear these kinds of things, friends, you have to realize you redefine things in the military now. Don't ask, don't tell. Now you start actively promoting gay activism. You're going to have to start working against religious faith. Play the next clip, Joey.
Let me make it clear. We are a militant and aggressive organization, and our militancy and aggression is in support of the U.S. Constitution. One of my heroes, so that everyone can gloriously and comprehensively celebrate whatever faith or no faith they want, but not being forced to by the most technologically most lethal organization ever created by humankind, Michael, which is our U.S. military. One of my heroes is Martin Luther King Jr., and his mantra was, "We shall overcome." And I don't believe that Martin would have been as effective as he was, and he's one of my biggest heroes, had not at the same time there been another civil rights fighter, Malcolm X, and his mantra was, "No, we shall come over." We are not, I guess if you look on, if you've ever had a dog or cat, Michael?
Sure.
If you care about animal rights, on one side of the spectrum, you've got the Humane Society. They're very sweet. They're very nice. They're very chilled. No one doesn't like them. Everyone loves them. The far end of the spectrum, you've got PETA. I guess I would say we're PETA when it comes to the separation of church and state, where all the nuclear weapons and drones are. If remember, if your audience doesn't like it, I don't care. I'm not running for office. I will say this, although I disagree about everything with you, pretty much everything. You're professional and courteous, and it might be fun to do the show another time.
Right, so of course we're going to treat him with courtesy and respect. The fact of the matter is, he is standing against the free sharing of the gospel as it has been shared for years in the military, as if there is this conspiracy. When you'll hear a chaplain talking about, absolutely, we want to share the gospel with everyone, these are targets people will reach, and using typical terminology, we're fishers of men, we're reaching out. Things are heating up. Things are heating up. But the bad news is the good news. People can't just sit on the sidelines anymore. People can't just sit back anymore and say, oh, well, we had a nice service Sunday. No, this is coming your way. This cannot be avoided. So what do you do? Get my book, Revolution, The Call of Holy War. The war we talk about is a spiritual war, overcoming evil with good, overcoming hatred with love. The weapons we fight with are prayer and sacrificial care and preaching the gospel. Get this book. It is a manual for revolutionary living. It will stir your heart as by God's grace it has stirred tens of thousands of other hearts. And in the book, we're enclosing a 5x7 card, 10 commitments of a Jesus revolutionary. You'll read these, simple, clear. You can work on one each day over a period of weeks and months. Your life will be changed, practical and clear. And these are yours for your gift of any size. So help us. Stand with us on the air. We want to send this out to every one of you. 1-800-278-9978. That's the number to call. 1-800-278-9978. One more time. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, many of you have been saying, well, when society gets to a certain point, then I'll take a stand. Friends, We have crossed that point, that line, for years already. Time to stand up and be counted. It's time for the pro-life movement in America to rise. This could be the moment we're waiting for.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Have you ever seen a sign that says Carpe Diem? And you think, what does Carpe Diem mean? You've seen the sign, but you don't know what it means. Oh, well, Carpe Diem is seize the day. Seize the day. Seize this moment, a unique period of time, a unique window, a unique moment. Seize the day. 866-348-7884. I want to talk about that today in terms of pro-life. It's Wednesday. We focus on the world. We focus on moral, cultural issues. And some major things have taken place in recent days. A little over a week ago, Norma McCovey passed away, passed from this world, and went to be with the Lord. You may not be familiar with her name, but she was the Roe in Roe v. Wade, and subsequently came to faith and became a great pro-life advocate. Then, of course, just days ago, Dr. Kermit Gosnell, the notorious Philadelphia abortion doctor, and yes, now convicted baby killer, received two life sentences, and more reports about horrors. More and more shocking things being exposed behind the scenes. More and more Americans saying, wait a second. If it was wrong to kill the baby in the womb, if that's what the pro-life people are saying, and I thought that was fine, but now you kill that baby a minute later outside the womb, why is one right and one wrong? People are beginning to wonder. I thought it was fine to abort, but now I'm seeing there's more to it. This is something happening here in Charlotte, North Carolina. The busiest abortion mill was shut down for a short period of time because of violations in the health code. This is the second time, I believe, it's happened to this clinic, Latrobe. We'll have more information on that a little bit later in the broadcast, but this is another moment where you realize, okay, time for pro-life people to seize the moment. Time for pro-life people who have been trying to rally the troops to now make a full-fledged assault on the ideological structure, the false mentality, the lies. Expose these things in the name of truth so that change can come to America, that young lives can be saved, that the dignity of mothers can be preserved, that hope can be given to those who have no hope, and that the way of life can be offered to them. When I read a story about the Brownsville Revival, broke out in Pensacola, Florida in 1995, and I served as a leader in that move from 1996 until 2000. When I read a story about it from my friend, Evangelist Steve Hill. It was, 4 or 5 months into the meetings being held almost every night of the week and people coming from around the nation and even other nations being changed. Steve was asked why he canceled out all of his speaking engagements from around the world. He was scheduled to be in all different parts of the world, and he canceled them to stay there and preach. And he gave an answer. The other side of the break, I'll tell you where this answer came from. He said, the opportunity of a lifetime must be seized during the lifetime of the opportunity. Let me share that again. The opportunity of a lifetime must be shared during the lifetime of the opportunity. Now is such a time for the pro-life movement in America. Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us today on The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. I know these things are unpleasant. I know that when we talk about the realities of abortion, it's difficult to listen to. Some of you may have little kids in the car at this hour, and some parts of our listening audience, they're picking up kids from school. I understand these are difficult things. But this, friends, excuse me, is our window to talk about them, as the opportunity of a lifetime must be seized during the lifetime of the opportunity. I heard that quote from Steve Hill back in, I think, the fall of 1995. And I thought, that sounds like a Leonard Ravenhill quote. Leonard Ravenhill, the famous author of Why Revival Tarries and other books on revival and prayer, a man that became a very close friend the last 5 years of my life and in many ways a mentor, poured into me from the ages of 82 to 87 till he went to be with the Lord in 1994. And he had these pithy little sayings, these little quotes that would be piercing to just piercing, strong. He'd say things like, the man who's intimate with God will never be intimidated by man. On his gravestone, the epitaph says this, and it was on stationery he'd send out: are the things you're living for worth Christ dying for? Are the things you are living for worth Christ dying for? And I saw that quote from Steve, the opportunity of a lifetime must be seized during the lifetime of the opportunity. And I said, that sounds like Leonard Ravenhill, but he's with the Lord at that point. I'd never heard it from him. So I called his widow, Martha. I said, Martha, I read this quote from Steve. Brother Len used to call him Stevie. I read this quote from Steve, and it sounded like Brother Len. Was it? She said, oh, I don't recall ever hearing him say that. So then I called Steve, and I said, Steve, where'd you get that quote from? He said, oh, a few weeks before Brother Len had his stroke, which was September of 94, he was talking to me one day, and he pointed his finger at me and said, Stevie, the opportunity of a lifetime must be seized during the lifetime of the opportunity. There are windows of opportunity. Here's a good Greek word for you. Many of you know this. In fact, it's one of the words, Hebrew or Greek word, that's actually being used accurately. The word kairos, K-A-I-R-O-S, a kairos moment. One of those seasons, one of those times where, lo and behold, there's a divine window open. When Jesus said to Jerusalem, wept over Jerusalem in Luke 19 and said, you didn't know the time of your visitation. He wept because he saw the destruction that was coming. Do you realize the temple was destroyed then and to this day has not yet been rebuilt? Do you know how much Jewish suffering and pain there's been through the centuries because my people did not recognize the time of our visitation? What's written in Hosea chapter 10, verse 12? Says this, Hosea is prophesying to northern Israel, to the 10 northern tribes, and he tells them it's time to seek the Lord until he rains down righteousness on them. It's time to turn. It's time to repent. It's time to seek the Lord until he comes and rains down righteousness on them. And they didn't do it. They didn't hear. As a result, those tribes were exiled and destroyed in the year 722 B.C. The prophet Zechariah urged in Zechariah chapter 10, verse 1, ask the Lord for rain in the time of spring rain. You see, in the ancient Israelite agricultural calendar, there were, and to this day in Israel, in the Middle East, there were two main seasons of rain. the heavy rains in the fall, this all tied in with the harvest and plowing and preparing ground and things like that. And then the lighter rains in April that would bring another harvest season to conclusion. The former rains and the latter rains, the fall rains and the spring rains. If the rain didn't come at the right time, there could be a drought. If it came at the wrong time or if it didn't come at all, there could be destruction of all different kinds. So God said, ask the Lord for rain at the time of spring rain. In other words, the season where the rain should be coming, pray for it. What I'm saying is, this is one of those unique moments. American consciousness of the horrors of abortion is starting to rise. There are more and more houses of horrors, not just Kermit Gosnell's, but others. There are notorious late-term abortion doctors, so late-term baby killers, who are caught on tape quotes that are almost unrepeatable as they sit there and smile. It's inhuman. It's utterly inhuman. We need to pray that God brings them to repentance, but we need to rise up as a people, as a church. Why should it just be three people in front of an abortion clinic offering people life and telling them there's a better way and willing to work with the mothers or a rare pregnancy crisis center in a city that's understaffed and underfunded? Why can't the church in a city rise up? If we did, we'd see the whole thing change literally overnight. Joey, let's play clip number five. Just the background to this, about 80,000 people, St. Peter's Square, pro-life march in Italy. One of our grads in Italy that we work with closely is on the front lines of the pro-life movement and writing a book, which will be a series of articles on abortion. Just want you to hear this quote.
But what abortion has done is anything but empower a woman. Abortion has turned a woman against herself. It's put her in a position of powerlessness.
Organizers say the pro-life movement has grown in the last few years, despite the fact that it gets little attention in the mainstream media. But they say more still needs to be done.
Our silence is becoming deafening.
This is not just yet another issue in our doctrine. This is something that is fundamental, a fundamental tenet of our faith, to see the dignity of God even in the child, in their weakest form.
And now they want to encourage others to promote a culture of life, not only in parishes, but out in society.
All right, friends, we have an opportunity to promote a culture of life like never before. We have an opportunity to demonstrate the beauty of these little ones, the importance of these little ones. Last hour, I talked about the slippery slope that's inevitable when you depart from the ways of life. So euthanasia, for example, in Holland and Belgium and other countries where I'm not going to read it again. I'll paraphrase it. But a doctor is saying, yeah, you know, we met with, it was a baby born, spina bifida, and we thought, okay, we're just going to let the baby die because this baby's going to have very severely handicapped life, low quality of life. So the doctor decided to let the baby die. But the baby didn't die. The baby was still able to eat and function, so they met with the priest and they met with the parents and they all agreed to kill the baby. Yeah, And the doctors just explained that. Yeah, so they did it with sedatives. How can it not lead in that direction? You see, when people said that no, abortion will not affect our view of life in general. It will not bring a devaluing of life in general. In point of fact, it has done that radically, radically. And we have become in so many ways a culture of death. I mean, to me, when you devalue life in the womb, it's not that big a jump to all types of euthanasia. It's not that big a jump to zombie movies being the craze. I know we had zombie movies in the past. I'm just saying it's the celebration of death and it's the degrading of life. It's all, and then the gratuitous violence, and on and on and on and on. Now we have a unique moment. I'm going to be talking to a guest who's going to encourage you and stir your heart shortly. And for all of our friends listening in Charlotte, we've got some really, really big radio news. I mean, really big, first of its kind in our nation, radio news. I cannot wait to share with you. 866-348-7884. Have you been involved in the pro-life movement? Are you frustrated with not seeing more people out? Maybe this can be the day to mobilize. You've been on the front lines. Give us a call.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to put out a question. I put this out in the past, and I've not yet gotten a response to this. Now, look, I know it can be intimidating to come on radio. Some have no problem making a call. Others, it's intimidating. Or you think it's not fair, because it's my mic and my show, and I can cut you off if I want to and make you look bad or something like that. I promise you it wouldn't make you look bad under any circumstance. If what you say makes you look bad, that's the consequence of what you say. But I'm not going to play some game with you. If you don't let me talk or use inappropriate language, of course, we'll cut you off and then give you a chance to think about it and come back in a minute. But I've asked this question. I've not gotten anyone to call in yet. So I want to encourage you to call in again if you consider yourself pro-choice or believe it's a woman's right to choose. 866-348-7884. If you agree that what Dr. Kermit Gosnell has been doing was wrong, killing babies who were delivered outside of the womb, so they were not successfully aborted inside the womb, they were killed outside the womb. If you believe that is wrong, I have two questions for you. Number one, would it be wrong if the baby was not viable? In other words, let's say it was a baby aborted at 14 weeks, so it wouldn't be viable outside the womb. And that baby was delivered and was delivered alive and then was killed. Would that be wrong? I just want to understand it. But my bigger question, if a baby was delivered that was viable, a late-term abortion, a baby was delivered that was viable, and then that baby was killed, why is it wrong to kill that baby outside the womb, but it wouldn't be wrong to kill that baby inside the womb? I'm honestly looking for someone to answer that. And if, in fact, you used to hold to those views and you used to feel that way, well, tell me why. You don't have to defend it now, but if you used to feel that way and you don't anymore, let me know why. Okay, May 15th, ABC News. That sounds like today. Dr. Kermit Gosnell, the Philadelphia abortion doctor convicted of first-degree murder in the deaths of three babies, was sentenced to a third life term today. Gosnell was handed two life sentences Tuesday after a deal was struck with prosecutors which spared him a potential death sentence. Third sentence was handed down today, and on it goes. The report of what happened in the clinic, blood was on the floor. The clinic reeked of urine, and bags of fetal remains were stacked in freezers, and on and on and on. Okay, you've heard about that. I've been saying for the last few minutes, the opportunity of a lifetime must be seized during the lifetime of the opportunity. That this is a unique moment for the pro-life movement to rise up and take a stand. I'm joined by a dear friend and colleague, David Benham. He has been on the front lines of pro-life movement since he was born, because his dad has been on the front lines of the pro-life movement. And obviously, the horrific stories that emerge from Philadelphia and Gosnell's clinic, and now from some other places, confirm why you and your dad would call these places abortion mills and not abortion clinics. David, do you see this, as horrible as this is, as a moment to galvanize the pro-life movement in America, a moment to seize the initiative and to expose the horrors of abortion?
Absolutely. This is a perfect time for the church to come together based upon the reality of what's truly taking place behind closed doors. I mean, we think it's just a public debate, but it is a life and death issue right here in our own backyard at a preferred women's clinic. They call it a clinic. We call them mills. The reason why we call them mills is because one of the things, according to North Carolina law, that you have to do as an abortion provider is piece they call it a package of contents, the POC. You have to piece the POC back together to make sure that the abortion was complete. Well, here at a preferred women's clinic, they were not putting the POCs back together, and women were walking around with remains of babies inside of them. It was disgusting. It is pathetic that we allow this to go on. And yesterday we were gathered literally as a praise and worship service right in front of the abortion clinic, celebrating the fact that finally these places were exposed for what they really are. Unfortunately, they're back open again, and that's a whole nother topic.
Right, but that's a sign.
It is.
It's a sign. And so here's the outrage. They could be shut down temporarily for not putting the parts of the baby back together. So the possibility that a woman is walking around with part of an aborted baby in her womb. But it's no problem if they successfully kill the baby and then put the pieces back
together.
That's
no problem. That would be a perfectly fine package of contents, as the report says.
Package of contents. All right, David, we've got some time to talk about some issues, how we can seize the moment, what's happening with Cities for Life. What happened with Norma Covey, who just recently went to be with the Lord? That story, it's an amazing story to tell. But just quickly, City of Charlotte, where you've been with your family for about 10 years now?
Yes, 10 years.
What's actually happening? Just take a minute and give us some hope. What's actually happening in terms of babies being saved and then help for parents and things like that?
Absolutely. I'll go just based on 12 months ago, there were 375 babies saved from one abortion clinic in 2012 in Charlotte. We have three abortion clinics. And what we've done with Cities for Life is we try our best to make Charlotte a city for life. And number one, it's the life of Jesus Christ. So we make abortion clinics a mission field. So it's a call to the evangelical church, and Catholics come out with us. And it's a call for all of the people of God to come together and make the abortion clinic a mission field. Secondarily, we offer what's called a life network. All of the pro-life ministries that from adoption to baby showers to pregnancy care centers to housing, all of the needs that need to be met by these mothers that are truly in need, we put together a life network. So when a mother chooses life, we then can plug her into the life network. And that's what we're doing through Cities for Life.
The website?
Citiesforlife.org, the number four.
Cities, the number four, citiesforlife.org. Friends, this is part of the Jesus Revolution message. Jesus changes us, and we, using his means, his methods, we go and change the world. Rather than blowing ourselves up like radical Muslims do, we bring life and hope and healing and salvation. I encourage you strongly to get this book, Revolution. It has rocked the lives of tens of thousands by God's grace. And in the book, we have printed on a 5x7 card, 10 commitments of a Jesus revolutionary. One of my friends was looking at this in New York, and he said, wow, just I take one, pray over it, get that in my life, then a few weeks later, work on the next one. Simple, clear ways to live. The book and the 5x7 card, which you can put it in the Revolution book or in your Bible, your gift of any size to help with our radio ministry and help us as we stand for righteousness. Call this number, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. Your heart will be stirred as we rejoin in a moment right here on the Line of Fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, focusing, as we do on Wednesdays, on the world, on moral and cultural issues. I mentioned in the first hour that when I travel, everybody knows Thursday. Yeah, Thursday. Oh, yeah, Dr. Brown, Thursday. It's thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Right, right. We love that. We learn so much. And then they say, oh, Friday. Friday's a favorite because you got questions, we've got answers, and we love those questions. And I love doing each of these days. And tomorrow we've got quite a thoroughly Jewish Thursday for you. But what's most interesting to me is the emails I get and pastors and leaders coming up to me and individuals coming up to me. They thank me the most for a stand for righteousness. They thank me the most for helping others, equipping others with grace and truth to go against the grain and to live as Jesus people in the midst of a sinful culture. Today we're focusing on a unique moment for the pro-life movement to seize the day and look for radical change to come. 866-348-7884. My guest, David Benham, he and his brother Jason are businessmen, but they are kingdom righteous people with a foundation that helps many here in America and in other parts of the world. And David has been on the front lines of the pro-life movement, mentored by his dad. And David, you and your family have a unique interaction with Roe v. Wade. Mm-hmm. First, tell our listeners the truth about Roe v. Wade. Was the case as it was actually presented?
No, not at all. It was based on a complete lie. And Norma McCorvey, who was the Jane Roe of the Roe versus Wade case, never got an abortion. And it was all based on fallacies. As a matter of fact, I was speaking with Miss Norma several months ago.
She just went to be with the Lord a little over a week ago.
Exactly. I was speaking with her not too long ago, and we were just kind of reminiscing. And she was like, I still can't believe just that big lie, and it changed the direction of a nation. And that's the father of lies. That's what he does.
All right, so she had a change of heart at some point, and your dad, street preacher,
yep,
fearless, hate it more than I'm hated.
Yeah, he's one of the few.
yeah, it's a short list of that. He actually had a role, a very direct role, in her coming to faith. So what happened? Give us the short history of that, because they were kind of near each other, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. My dad was a pastor of a small Methodist church in Dallas, Texas, just outside of Dallas, in Garland, actually. And we were very involved in pro-life, and as my dad transitioned into more of a pro-life role as the director of Operation Rescue, it is now Operation Save America, he found out that Norma McCorvey had started an abortion clinic in Dallas. So he decided, well, I'm going to go and get an office.
All right, so it was a lie that she told that was used to go to the Supreme Court, Roe v. Wade, but yes, then she actually had an abortion clinic.
Absolutely. She's going to capitalize on it. And she actually had a book that was written. And I'll get back to that in just a second. There was a secondary book, which I'll tell also. But she opened an office. And so my dad put an office right next to hers. And every single day, my dad's secretary, Rhonda Mackey, and her daughters would send either cookies or flowers or notes over. And my dad's interaction...
Not bullets, not bombs.
My dad actually started... This is back in the day when people thought that you could shoot an abortionist and it'd be justified. My dad began to preach and said, no, a Christian would actually step in front of the bullet. A Christian lays his life down, which is what our Savior did for us. So over time, Norma began to soften. And she says in her story that she was at a book signing, and there were several people there, about 100 or so folks, and my dad stood in the back, and at the top of his lungs,
we'll find out what he said when we come back. Oh, yeah, I didn't mean to set it up like that, but this is what you call good dramatic radio. And this is something of real significance. Someone standing up publicly after reaching out in love for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and praying, standing up publicly, and a life was radically affected. We've got some real encouragement for you today, but it's a time to stand. No more excuses. No more being on the sidelines. Time to stand.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. I quoted earlier in today's broadcast the words of saintly revivalist who went to be with the Lord in 94 at the age of 87, Leonard Ravenhill, who famously said, "The opportunity of a lifetime must be seized during the lifetime of the opportunity." This is one of those unique moments to seize in pro-life movement here in America. 866-348-7884, my guest, David Benham, with several organizations, but Cities for Life is something that gets a tremendous amount of his attention and effort. We want to focus on that. David, you were telling the story of Norma McCulvey. She was the Roe and Roe v. Wade. The whole case was based on a lie, and yet it's changed America and brought about the killing of over 50 million babies. She opens an abortion clinic. Your dad, who's a pastor, opens an office next door on a regular basis. Secretary, she sends her cookies and things like that on a daily basis. Then Norma McCulvey writes a book. And she's doing a public book signing, and your dad shows up. What happens?
My dad is there, and he's standing at the back of the crowd. And just before she begins to sign books, he said at the top of his voice, "Norma McCulvey, you are responsible for the wholesale manslaughter of millions of baby boys and girls," at the top of his voice. Now, he had previously been reaching out to her in all of the love and affection and tenderness, but he said later that something just came over him. It was the Spirit of the Lord. Well, later on, when Norma gave her heart to Christ, she said that was the changing moment of her life, where she remembers. I remember her telling me, "When your dad said those words, they pierced deeper into my heart than any words that have ever been spoken to me before." And so my dad said, I felt the Spirit of God come on me, and I knew I couldn't just sit back. I had to speak what God told me to speak to her. And that was the moment when she began to slowly change, and then she ended up getting radically saved and later asked my dad to baptize her.
That's the part of the story I want you to tell, so that she herself is a public witness to the fact that his words were used by God to convict her, bring her to himself. You've been at this for many years. You and your brother, different family members, were involved for years in front of abortion clinics, preaching the gospel, sometimes holding up signs just so people would see this is what happens to a baby that's aborted, offering women life, working with different ministries that do baby showers for the women that keep their babies, or adoption agencies, whatever. The different, you know, pregnancy crisis centers, there are so many, but there are so few actually involved with this. How do you feel right now? Do you? I know you're a positive person like me. We're optimistic. Do you feel like the tide is turning, that it's a different day, or is it the same old, a little noise about this, the horrors with Gosnell, and back to business as usual?
The tide is definitely turning, and the statistics show. I mean, at one time during the Clinton administration, there were over 2,000 freestanding abortion mills in America. Today, there are 650, and they are closing. There are several on the ropes that are closing, and we will have several abortion-free states, in my opinion, by the end of this year. This is the 40th year since Roe v. Wade, and I believe there's spiritual significance there. I just got back from Los Angeles, where we opened four new Cities for Life chapters. Some of the largest churches in the city got together. They had us come in, and these are churches of 10,000 members, and had us come in and explain to them exactly how to set up a front lines missionary endeavor to the pro-life movement in terms of going to an abortion clinic and bringing life. That's incredibly exciting.
So just explain this first, because a lot of people have a caricatured view of someone standing in front of an abortion mill. They have there's going to be caricatured. No offense to the King James Bible, but people are going to be using the King James Bible. Sure. They're going to be yelling and screaming. They're using almost mild profanity and cursing people as they walk into the clinic, and Christians say, I don't want to have that witness. But it's kind of the polar opposite of what
Absolutely.
You're talking about.
Absolutely. Back in the 80s and even the mid-90s, pro-life Christians were actually fighting a cause. They were trying to end abortion, just like you try to end the homosexual agenda. If you want to end those two issues, elect Muslims. Sharia law will surely take care of both of those issues. But we're not here to just simply destroy those issues. We are here to bring another kingdom. whose king is Jesus Christ. And conversions are what truly change the land. And we've seen conversions in the pro-life community. So what we've done is we've taken, instead of fighting a cause and protesting, we proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ at local abortion clinics. So it's not a protest, it's not a demonstration, it's not picketing and fighting and arguing and fussing. It is a gospel proclamation. And with it, we have praise and worship. And with it, we have prayer. And with it, we have a life network that is truly geared to bringing life and bringing real tangible choices to abortion-bound and abortion-determined mothers. When we do that, that's us truly obeying and honoring the greatest two commandments, loving God with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength, and loving our neighbor as ourselves. So it's the perfect way for Christians in America to love our neighbor, those that have been thrown in a ditch, where the priest and Levite walk by on the other side of the street, but we say, no, we're going to look at them with compassion like the Good Samaritan. We're going to actually get off our horse, stop our journey wherever we're going, get off our horse. We're going to step into the ditch, put them on our horse, bandage their wounds, take them to an inn, pay for them, and follow up. That is truly a mission that has serious kingdom vision to it, and the church is beginning to catch on. When we make an abortion clinic a mission field, and love our neighbor as ourselves, now we have the Spirit of God helping us as opposed to the Spirit of God resisting us when we were fighting a cause back in the 80s.
Yeah, you know, I think of some of our Fire School of Ministry students who've helped and served in this capacity for years now, working mm-hmm. with ministries that you've been involved with. And they were telling me about a security guard that just came under conviction, just, I can't do this, I can't be working here, and just quit in the middle of the day because of the presence of God and because of the life that's coming. Life is going to expose and contrast death.
Absolutely.
So ultimately, these are death clinics. Bottom yes. line is, that's the goal, to terminate a life that is in the womb. Just received this note from a listener named Debbie. I was listening to your show, this is moments ago, when a Facebook post from the National Right to Life was forwarded to me. The Oregon Health and Science University reports that they used cloning techniques to produce human embryos. 21 of these were sustained until they produced stem cells. They were then killed, and the stem cells were, quote, harvested. They were 7 days old. Hmm. That takes us on a whole other tangent, but it's the same thing. You've got a human life
that's right.
that's being terminated, be it 7 days, be it 6 months. What has happened now at the La Trobe Abortion Clinic, the busiest in Charlotte? Hmm. What has happened? What is being reported? I know you said it was closed temporarily. It's reopened. Yeah. God knows how and why. But tell us what is documented to have been taking okay. place in there.
All of these are on the Department of Health at North Carolina. The Preferred Women's Clinic, which is located at 3220 La Trobe Drive in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's all public record. Was shut down for 4 days. Their license was suspended indefinitely, which is awfully odd why they're reopened today. Several of the things that they were doing, they promised to give compassionate, caring, and dedicated service to women. Well, I can tell you this, they are liars, because they did not give compassionate, caring, and dedicated service to women. One of the things that they had been doing is they were not putting their packages of contents back together. In other words, the babies. They were not piecing them back together. When you can't do that, you're supposed to send it to the pathologist. They were not. So women were having to come back in to finish the extractions, unfortunately. Secondly, they were given methadexone. That's supposed to be an injectionable RU486 type of, it's an abortion stimulant. They were actually giving it strategically, orally, and they charged the women for it orally. What that did was, that was tightening the uterus, forcing them to come in and get an extraction where they make more money. At the bottom of the line is, they're looking for more money. There was blood, dried blood spatterings on the walls, all kinds of other violations. We have been there, Cities for Life and various other, 40 Days for Life and various other ministries have been faithfully out on the front lines of this issue at the La Trobe Abortion Clinic. And we have seen ambulances taking women out. Some of the other things, you're supposed to keep a woman, when she's had an abortion, for 2 hours in the waiting room until she comes out, and then have a driver take them home. Well, they were releasing them within 30 minutes, and some of the ladies were driving themselves home. Terrible. It's absolutely awful what's been going on. And the report goes on and on and on. It's appalling that our state would reissue a license back to people that would conduct business like this. It's hateful to women. It's certainly hateful to children, but it's especially hateful to women.
Yeah, so not only would a good operation a good, clean, compassionate operation result in the killing of babies in the womb and often the scarring emotionally or physically of the mother mm-hmm. for life, and who knows the effects on the father in terms of his conscience. But that's if they were doing things well. You add insult to injury. You add horror to death with this. David, when we come back, I just want you to talk to all of our listeners. Okay, well, I want to do something. I don't know what to do. I know this is wrong. I'm a little bit afraid to stand in front of abortion. What can I do? We'll talk about that with David Benham, Cities for Life. That's the number 4, citiesforlife.org. Why not launch this in your own city?
Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My friends, all of our friends in Charlotte, be listening tomorrow and Friday for some major radio news that will be the first in America coming to Charlotte. So be sure to be tuning in tomorrow. Check with your friends if you miss any part of the broadcast. If you're not on my email list, go to AskDrBrown.org, our revamped website. Explore it. Click on latest audio, latest article, latest video, latest blog. Just dive in. Take advantage of the resources there. And you'll see a little email icon right on the homepage. Click on that and sign up for our email list. Back with my guest, David Benham, Benham Foundation, Benham Realty, but focusing now on citiesforlife.org. I think, though, David, it's important that we mention that you are not, quote, in full-time ministry now. And, of course, that's a misnomer. Yeah. It just has to do with what one gets salaried to do, because we're all full-time serving the Lord. But David, on average, you got a big family, and you're disciplined and things like that. But on average, how many hours a week do you put into the business?
To the business of...
Real estate and related endeavors.
I'm a full-time, usually full-time in real estate.
Right, and you got to be constantly pulled back to keep
you.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. I'm consistent, yeah.
Right. I mean, otherwise you'd be around the clock. So it's not like you put in 5-10 hours in the, you know, business stuff, play golf, you know, a few rounds of golf a week, and then in your spare time, because you got nothing else to do, you invest some time in pro-life. You're a businessman. You and your brother are businessmen with successful business, working hard at it, but it's been a priority to you to get involved in a holistic pro-life movement.
Absolutely.
Citiesforlife.org. That's the number 4, citiesforlife.org. Okay, I've got listeners all over America looking at an email I got from Macedonia. So let dear Philippe, your email really encouraged me. I don't know if you're expanding, David, to Macedonia right now, but let's focus on America. What can I want to do something. I'm a housewife. I'm raising my kids at home, homeschooling. I'm working 2 jobs out there trying to pay the bills to provide for my family. I'm busy in ministry, but I want to do something. David, talk to our audience. What can we do?
Well, in Nehemiah's time, when the walls were broken down, they would be rebuilding the wall, but they would also have a sword on the other side. And when the trumpet was blown, they would gather together at the exposed places of the wall as families.
Mm-hmm.
This is the key. We gather as families, and we come together to the exposed places in the wall. And one of the biggest exposed places in the wall in America is the local abortion clinics in our cities. We have rejected them and neglected them. They need to be a mission field once again. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. All we need to simply do is go like the good neighbor went into the ditch. And so what we do through Cities for Life and how we mobilize people is we say, go to the website, browse through, see some of the things that we do, watch some of the videos. They'll compel you to action. And then we've got action steps. One of the first action steps is simply find where a local abortion clinic is and go there and stand on the sidewalk and pray. Just simply pray. Take your children with you. I've been doing it since I was a kid. Trust me, you are safer in the battle with your parents and with your children than you are in a public school system somewhere. You are much safer there. So you go there and you pray. Second thing is you just simply get some of the material that we have through our website and you can hand it to the cars as they're driving in and just simply say, we're here to help. That's it. That's it. And it's got all the information inside these packets and phone numbers of support organizations for women that choose life. Thirdly, if you want to be a little bit more bold, you can begin to sidewalk counsel and speak to some of the ladies that go in. If you have
who are the best kind of people to do that? Obviously, anyone can, but yes. Who are the best people to do it?
Mothers and daughters. They're so good. My wife and my daughter will sidewalk counsel. The ladies that we have sidewalk counseling are fantastic. A lot of us men, we will stand, and when we have an opportunity, as some of the security guards are there or some of the other men that are sitting in their cars, we have a chance to minister to them and speak the gospel to them. And we have seen conversion. It's like fishing in a bowl. I mean, it's wonderful. People are right there. You're offering tangible support, and yet you're giving them the gospel of Jesus Christ at their moment of need.
And are a lot of people struggling emotionally when they come to have an abortion?
Oh, every one of them are, because it's inbuilt. There's a law. The law of God is in our heart. We know that it's a human being. We know that it's a life. There are a choice few that are seared in their conscience, but 99.9% of the folks there are absolutely devastated and struggling. And we have had thousands through the years, thousands of women come to us and say, I never spoke to you guys, but when I saw your presence on the sidewalk, and I just turned my car around and left. Oh, and by the way, here's my 12-year-old. Mm. Here's my 16-year-old. Mm. Here's my 4-year-old. And it's very emotional. It's a wonderful opportunity. So everyone has an hour or two in their week where they can go and pray on a sidewalk at a local abortion clinic.
Yeah, and, you know, realities, looking at the late-term abortions performed by George Tiller, boasting of more than 60,000 of these babies, so many would have been viable.
Do you know another business thing that he did? George Tiller would actually have a priest come in and baptize the babies. And people would pay for that. You could pay a little extra money for a funeral.
It's a horror beyond horrors. And here, bringing life, offering life. And David, there are other organizations then that work together if you want to look into adoption.
Absolutely. Or
you want to keep the baby, but you need financial help.
Yes.
And again, one of the ministries in Charlotte, we get the emails periodically. Here are the baby showers.
That's right.
With the couples and their babies. So people have given. And it's got to be gratifying, though, to see people waking up. This was just off limits, out of sight, out of mind. The church, so many people stuck their head in the sand. And yes. Now the issue is rising, and we seize the moment.
What we're seeing around the country, and this is really exciting, pastors are calling us. As I was mentioning at the beginning of the broadcast, there was a pastor, very large pastor, who said his people were asking him how they can get involved. So he came looking for us, and we said, here's how.
All right, friends, citiesforlife.org. That's the number 4, citiesforlife.org. Check it out. A.W. Tozer said, you know, to paraphrase, we talk a lot, we do a little. Now is the time to do. We've got a 5x7 card. I meditated, prayed over these things for some time and wrote out 10 commitments of a Jesus revolutionary, starting with quality time with God in the word and prayer every day. 10 simple things to live by. We printed that card up together with my book, Revolution, which it'll stir you. You'll understand what it really means to follow Jesus and how radical and wonderful the calling is. The book is 330 pages, a $13 book, and the 5x7 card to put in your Bible or to put in the Revolution book, yours for your gift of any size. So stand with us, help as you can, become a monthly torchbearer supporter, hold our hands up as together we make a difference. 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. One more time, that's 1-800-278-9978, or just go to our website, askdrbrown.org, click on Donate to stand with us. My bottom line today, when the light shines in the darkness cannot overcome it. Let the culture of life shine in the midst of death. Hearts will be changed.